good.
What do you got?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the same one.
So New York State Racing Paramutual Wagering and Breeding Law, Section 102, provides that the New York State Gaming Commission shall consist of 7 members appointed by the governor by and with the advice and consent of the Senate. 4 members having been confirmed by the New York State Senate affords the commission the ability to establish a quorum and undertake action. This present meeting of the commission is now called to order. Ms. Secretary, will you please call the roll?
Commissioner Crotty?
Here.
Commissioner Pocumba?
Here.
Commissioner Sample?
Here.
Commissioner Snyder?
Here.
Ms. Secretary, will you please have the record reflect that a quorum of qualified members are present, thus enabling the transaction of business? By statute, a member shall be designated as chair of the commission by the governor to serve in such capacity at the pleasure of the governor or until his or her term as commission member expires, whichever is first. No designation has occurred, thus the commission has determined to select one member to act as a presiding officer for the purposes of this meeting. Gentlemen, would you like to select a presiding officer?
I nominate John Pocumba.
Second.
Mr. Pocumba, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Rob. Minutes of the commission meetings conducted on August 1st, 2013 have been provided to members in advance. At this time, I'd like to ask members if there are any edits, corrections, or amendments. I just had one myself, a question on 6C, which was the permanent adoption of use of cellular telephones in the paddock. It was my understanding that that was a temporary extension. Is that correct, Dave?
Yes, the extension is for permanent adoption on a one-year basis.
Okay, and there was also going to be some type of review of what other states are doing and some type of report as to what the experience is in other jurisdictions?
We'll do that, and we'll monitor also the experience that we have in New York State during that time.
Okay. And then,
would you like the minutes to reflect that, sir?
Yes, I would, Rob.
I think that would help in terms of clearing things up. As I knew that we did an extension, I did not know it was for the year. I thought it was in lieu of getting answers to that issue of what happens in other jurisdictions and what happened in the past.
Excellent.
Hey, do we need a motion for that?
For the minute change?
Yeah.
No.
Okay, then I would ask for a motion to approve the minutes of the August 1st, 2013 meeting.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The minutes are approved. Next on the agenda is the report of the Acting Executive Director, Rob.
Thank you. I don't have anything formal today like previous meetings, but I would like to provide a couple of updates on some matters that we previously discussed, the first being NYRA wagers. The Commission's conditional approvals for the Pick 5 wager were satisfied by NYRA management and by the Stewarts. Thus, the Pick 5 and the Show Quinella wagers went live on Saturday. Also this past week saw the formal introduction of AmTote under the new Tote contract. The Tote system debuted last Tuesday for simulcast patrons and for live racing this past Saturday. NYRA has kiosks around Aqueduct and Belmont to assist patrons with the new machines and the new interfaces. I would also like to talk about the Equine Medical Director. We have completed all of our interviews and have identified a candidate. We are now working with Cornell University and the Division of Budget to obtain the appropriate approvals that are necessary in order to bring that candidate aboard. And we expect to have that hopefully secured by the next meeting that we have. Being cognizant of the Commission's interest in equine health and safety, I also want to bring up how the Saratoga meet closed. This meet ended with 5 equine fatalities, which was an increase of 1 from the 2012 Saratoga meet. However, overall, according to NYRA-provided statistics, the breakdown rate has fallen from 4.0 per 1,000 starts in 2012 to 1.6 per 1,000 starts in 2013. While we're pleased with the trending data, it's too soon to determine if any of the new safety protocols that have been in place are reasonably the cause of the reduction. I'd also be remiss when we're talking about equine health and safety if I don't mention there were two jockeys that suffered fractures during this past meet. Joel Rosario broke his left foot and Jose Lescano his left wrist in separate spills. And additionally, exercise rider Ray Bolgado was seriously injured in an accident at the Oklahoma track and is still, I believe, at Albany Medical Center.
Can you go back on the fatalities again? I'm sorry.
Sure.
What was the numbers?
This past meet was five.
Five per thousand?
No. Oh, no. Per thousand thus far in 2013, it's 1.6.
Went from 4.0 to 1.6.
And in 12, it was?
4.0 per thousand.
We just don't know generally why, or?
No, I think it's still a little premature to assign efficacy of any of the changes. But that's something that I believe we'll do in connection
would
with the
equine
medical director.
Would it be helpful to look at the number of unique starters in that number as well? So in 2012, you had X number of races with X number of starters. Many of those starters are repeats from the same races, right? A New York bred horse may run anywhere from five to some other higher number of times per year. There's less horse flesh now over the last 3 years. The total number nationally is down. It would make sense to sort of look at it from that perspective as well, that perhaps it's not necessarily, I mean, you know, the numbers get big enough, you could assume anything you wanted to them, but like, if you had a number of unique starters in 12 that was different than 13, that might get something. I think maybe some of the earlier fatalities were horses that have been knocking around for some period of time, so maybe it was a higher trend, and now that you have just less of them by virtue of time and age and other breakdowns, that might be it would be interesting to see what that
yeah,
is.
Yeah, that would be something that we can study. As
unique starters and number of starters, right, as two different sort of numbers.
We can certainly do that. And like I said, I think this is appropriate for the equine medical director when they come aboard to take a look at that.
Yeah, because I think sometimes those numbers are a little bit misleading, right? The overall trend for the year. Like, I think you have to go down a little bit deeper to figure out exactly what's going
which
on.
Which is why I suggested we can't make any determinations at this point. Last thing I want to talk about is the Traverse Stakes. As you're all aware, the trainer of Traverse Stakes second-place finisher Marino lodged a complaint alleging that the jockey of winner Will Take Charge used an electrical device on his horse during the running of the race. Will Take Charge, of course, won the race by a nose. The investigation was preliminarily conducted by the three track stewards and commission investigators. The commission also sought the assistance of New York State Police, which has expertise in video analysis. This investigation remains pending and is with the state police.
Do we have any idea when they're going to close out?
We don't. They're still, at this moment, gathering video materials. And that's the conclusion.
Thank you, Rob. Next, moving on to rulemaking. Section 104.19 of the Racing Paramutual Wagering and Breeding Law authorizes the commission to promulgate rules and regulations that it deems necessary to carry out its responsibilities. In that regard, the Commission will from time to time promulgate rules and amendments to those rules pursuant to the State Administrative Procedure Act. Today, we have five rulemaking items for consideration. The first one is the permanent adoption of rules reflecting merger. The first proposal for Commission consideration is to make permanent adoption of the comprehensive reorganization of rules we proposed at our meeting of June 26, 2013. These amendments have been in effect since then as emergency rules. My recollection is the proposal does not implement any substantive changes, but rather changes references from the Racing and Wagering Board, Chairman of the Board, the Lottery, and the Directory of the Lottery to the Commission, reflects the Commission's four divisions, modernizes or omits obsolete language, and standardizes style and usage. I have also been advised that staff review has identified several non-substantive style and usage changes to be added to the proposed rules, consistent with the amendments already proposed. Ed, could you explain it?
Yes, Mr. Perglemba. further review in conjunction with the Legislative Bill Drafting Commission that reviewed the initial proposal has identified a number of other technical amendments that are in your materials under at the end of tab 5A, summarized, that are consistent with the stylistic and editing changes that we had proposed in June and posted online at our website. So we are continuing to update that for filing with the Department of State, one comprehensive set of consistent rules to be adopted. There was one public comment that we received from a representative of Monticello Raceway who was concerned that the elimination of a particular rule that was based on an obsolete statute might have adverse repercussions in relation to payments that the regional OTBs make to the same track in the region. We've discussed that comment with the representative, though, and the concern was more on statutory interpretation rather than the regulation. The regulation was just repeating a lot of statute and hadn't been updated in many, many years. And there was actually a Racing and Wagering Board prior interpretation that made clear the issue they were concerned about. It was in statute, it's clear in one section of the statute, less clear in another. But the Racing and Wagering Board had always interpreted the two as the same, the definition of what the region is for regional track, that Monticello is in the same region as New York City and Long Island OTBs. So the person who lodged the comment discussed that with staff and said she would be satisfied if our filing with the Department of State explained in our notice of adoption the current interpretation, the consistent interpretation of the commission, and have that reflected in the record, and then would be satisfied with the change. So,
is the commission, by implication, making a determination that that prior interpretation of the two pieces of legislation, one that is consistent with the other, that Monticello is in one region and not the other, are we actually making an affirmative decision to support that interpretation?
No, but by statute, the commission is inheriting the prior body of rulemaking and law and interpretations that the legacy agencies had.
Right.
So until such time as you might wish to change that interpretation, that's already an existing interpretation.
We're not taking that away.
You're not making any
affirmative decision on that point. We're just adopting it like everything else that we're adopting that came before us.
Correct. You're not even adopting it. It's been adopted by the legislature on our commission behalf.
Thank you.
I also would like to note, though, that the comment period ends today. So in the event that any comments are received by the close of business that are substantive, we would alert you to that. And if there's anything of concern, act accordingly. So subject to those additions that we described, we think this set of proposed amendments to all of our rulemaking is ripe for your permanent adoption. And barring any further public comment that's germane, we'd be ready to file such with the Department of State tomorrow if you adopt it.
Any discussion? Any questions?
No.
Yeah, I'll take a motion to permanently adopt the rules reflecting merger.
I so move.
Motion by Commissioner Sample.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Crotty. All in favor?
Aye.
The rule on permanent adoption reflecting merger has been approved. Second rulemaking item is the permanent adoption of Mega Millions and raffle game rules. The next item is a proposal to make permanent two rule amendments initially approved at our meeting of June 26th. These rules regard the Mega Millions lottery game and proposed raffle lottery games. My recollection is the Mega Millions rule allows New York to comply with the amendments adopted by the multi-state consortium that administers that game. Specifically, the consortium resolved to modify the Mega Millions game matrix, which sets forth win probabilities and prizes, and changed the annuity prize to a laddered payment structure, similar to that used with Powerball. The raffle game rule allows New York Lottery to participate in an upcoming Halloween-based multi-state lottery game and future games that are similar. Is that correct, Ed?
That's correct.
Ed, was there any public comment received regarding either proposal?
There has been no public comment, but as with the past rule, the public comment period will end today. So in the event there is germane public comment, we would make the commissioners aware of the same. The Halloween-based game you referred to is already underway in other partner states. It's a group, an ad hoc group of six states that are going to be participating in that. Sales in New York are anticipated to begin September 29 if the commission finalizes the adoption of that rule.
Thank you, Ed. Any discussion? Any questions? I take a motion to permanently adopt the Mega Millions in Raffle Game rules. Motion by Commissioner Snyder, second by Commissioner Sample. All those in favor?
Aye.
The rule on Mega Millions in Raffle Games is permanently adopted. The next item is proposed lottery subscription rules. This next proposal is a staff recommendation regarding lottery subscriptions. The proposal makes several changes that would allow for more flexible patron subscription participation and reflect technological advances that once constrained participation. Ed, could you explain this one?
Yes. There's a subscription program in place where people can file an application with the commission and play consecutive draws in certain lottery games that they select. And current regulations have certain limitations in them that lottery staff believe are inconsistent with the flexibility they need. For example, a limitation on maximum number of members in a group being 10. We now have online capabilities where people can file applications online that weren't contemplated by the currently existing rules. Current rules suggest that when people renew a subscription, there has to be a 12-day lead time, which is obsolete in current technology. We're able to turn around a subscription renewal much faster than that. So there are a number of changes that staff in reviewing the text of the current regulations believe need to be updated to reflect modern practices. And that's the set of rules that are going to be proposed if you want to propose these for permanent rulemaking. If you choose to do so, it would open the public comment period, and then down the line you could consider adopting them as a permanent rule.
Any discussion?
No. Just a comment. I mean, you thought through the scenario that, you know, these subscriptions can get a little bit. It's very clear. It's affirmative one way or the other. If 10 people are in and a subscription keeps running, it's all 10 people are in, right? The fall off and missing piece for, you know, the guy who didn't think he put in or was dropped or there's some sort of inadvertent, you know, it only comes out when they hit the mega ball, right? You know, like I'm sure it happens quite regularly, but you know, when there gets to be a lot of, I just don't understand the procedures well enough to go through it, but I assume you've thought through sort of an affirmative nature of people being in or out, right?
Yeah.
And a 10-person syndicate, number 9 drops out, there's some level of action that indicates that number 10 is not in the pool anymore.
Yeah. I would ask, we have our director of lottery, Gardner Gurney, is with us today and can address that probably better than I can.
Yes, at the time that you're reapplying, when you're going to be getting a new subscription, it's not an automatic renewal. You'll be going in, updating the member names, and it would go through.
And one person can update all the member names?
Yes, it's one person who's typically assigned as the lead for each subscription, and that's the person who normally is getting all the notifications. And it's up to that person to notify the other members in the subscription.
I assume that what we're talking about, first of all, is a temporary rulemaking that we're going to open a comment period for. And the purpose of the rulemaking from the staff point of view is actually to clarify and address type of issues that Commissioner Crotty is raising, and that allow for current technological advances to be used to make the implementation smoother. Is that
exactly fair?
Okay.
Anything else?
But you wouldn't comment if you didn't know you were dropped, right?
Right.
Right? You know, 10 people put in, they re-up, and that guy's kind of a jerk, right? You know? So they only put in for 9. I'm sure you've thought it through.
You're saying I don't know that amount.
Yeah, how would you know? Yeah. You know, you wouldn't comment. Like, you did it before, but, you know, I guess if they weren't collecting money or they weren't in the thing, why would you keep them in if he wasn't? I don't know. I'm sure you guys have thought it through.
But the point you raised, John, is for the commission, we're in privity with whoever the group is
Fair
that's
enough.
Indicated.
Right.
If there are issues in terms of they fraud or things amongst people who are outside of that group, that would be for private parties to determine.
To determine on their own, right. You're clear as to what you're got, what you have, right?
Exactly. Okay. So through the application and the subscription process, we know exactly who we have to pay
when there's
a winner.
That's the only thing you should worry about, I guess, right?
I think the staff will take into consideration Commissioner Crotty's comments and proposing the rules and reviewing the comments. Is there a motion to adopt the proposed lottery subscription rules or to propose the lottery subscription rules and have them sent out for comment? Motion by Commissioner Snyder, second by Commissioner Crotty. All those in favor?
Aye.
The proposal to move the lottery subscription rules is approved. The next item is proposed rulemaking on notice of corticosteroid injections in claimed thoroughbreds. The next proposal is a staff recommendation to approve the adoption as a permanent rule of an expired emergency rule regarding claimed thoroughbred horses. The rule would require the previous trainer of a claimed horse to provide the new owner within 48 hours after the claiming race is made official with an accurate record of all corticosteroid joint injections administered to the horse 30 days prior to the claiming race. This notice requirement would allow the new owner and trainer to make more fully informed decisions about veterinary care. The rule was recommended by the New York Task Force on Racehorse Health and Safety and was in effect as an emergency rule from December 12, 2012 to March 10, 2013. The commission permitted the rule to lapse while trainers adapted to another emergency rule which required them to submit a record of every corticosteroid joint injection to the commission within 48 hours of injection. Trainers and their veterinarians now make such reports through the commission's online reporting system, which has the capability to allow the previous trainer, when requested by a claiming trainer, to grant access to the last 30 days of reported corticosteroid joint injections for the horse. Ed, you want to elaborate?
Yes, Mr. Perklem, as you just mentioned, initially when proposed as an emergency rule, there were two very similar rules put in place at the same time. The other one, which you have since adopted as a permanent rule this summer, requires trainers and veterinarians to report all corticosteroid joint injections to the commission, which the commission can then pass on to the veterinarians at the track in pre-race examinations and make sure they know what joints to focus on and possible problem areas as they're clearing a horse to race. So the focus when both of those rules were put in place was on the latter, the one that you've since adopted as a permanent rule, to make sure that the owners, and the trainers and veterinarians were making that report to the commission. And a database was built to allow them to do so electronically. So the focus over the winter was on getting the regulated parties to adapt to that database. Since then, the database capability has been expanded to now be able to encompass the other previous emergency rule, which is the exchange of information between someone who claims a horse and the previous trainer or owner of the horse. That can now be done through the commission's IT capabilities, which wasn't the case back in the winter. It required more paperwork of the two aspects of it. So now that we have the capabilities to funnel that information exchange through the same technological system. Staff recommends that it be appropriate to adopt both aspects of the initial emergency rule as per our rules.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
This rule is focused on providing some level of protection between two private actors.
You're correct.
Is the commission, through this rule or any other action, taking any responsibility for affirming the data? Or are we simply a conduit with no responsibility for the content of the data?
We are a conduit of it, although the regulated parties have to have submitted similar data to the commission. So in the event private parties are complaining about inadequacies, we would be able to provide support based on the information that was provided to us as well if there's a discrepancy.
It turns out the data provided to us is inaccurate. When we pass it on, we're not affirming to the third party who takes it that the data is accurate. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
It's what we're telling the party that claimed the horse that we're passing along what was entered by the regulated party who was previously responsible for that horse's care.
We're the telco carrier. We have no responsibility for that message, right?
That's right, yes.
Okay. Any questions? Any other discussion?
No.
I'll take a motion to adopt the proposed rulemaking on notice of corticosteroid injections and claimed thoroughbreds.
I move.
Motion by Commissioner Sample, second by Commissioner Snyder. All in favor?
Aye.
The rule is adopted. Next is a rule regarding proposed lottery prize payment manner. It is my understanding the final rule proposal regards a staff recommendation to approve amendments regarding lottery prize payment. Specifically, the Division of Lottery proposes to add flexibility in the manner in which their prize payments are made, given current regulations are inconsistent and differ among ticket formats. This rule proposal would simplify payment and allow the commission to offer alternative means of payment. Ed?
Yeah, so there are two aspects to this proposal, both of which, if passed, would be consumer-friendly as well as ease administrative burden for commission staff. It would establish that regardless of the game, whether it's an instant ticket or a draw game, if the prize was $600 or less, which is the current threshold for federal withholding reporting, a player could get that prize from any lottery retailer in cash or by an alternative means, and then only get a payment by check if it's greater than $600. The second aspect of the proposed rulemaking would be to give us the flexibility to pay smaller prizes with some alternate method of payment, such as a debit card or some type of program that we don't currently have a plan for or capability for, but it's in the planning stages, is my understanding, to allow us the flexibility to do that and not have to, for example, if someone requests payment directly rather than through a retailer, instead of issuing a check for $2 or $5, be able to just give a cash card that person could then use like they would any other stored cash card.
Any questions? Discussion?
Is there any notice issue? I mean, are we going to have sort of customer blowback? People say, well, I expect cash. Is there some sort of, we're going to have a notice requirement? Are people going to have to be informed that they are potentially exposed to getting something other than cash if they win?
Yeah. Gordon, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, we obviously would have to tell customers that it's coming. Part of this is actually driven by the underbanked individual.
Yeah.
Who we send them a check drawn on KeyBank to the city of Long Island.
They have to give up a huge percentage of it to
a check casher.
Yeah.
This will take care of that, give them a debit card, they can use it anywhere.
But just to be clear, if you're sending them a check, if I understand the rule, that's because it's in excess of $600.
It's it's because it's coming from our system, because we've checked it on our lottery system as opposed to getting cash right at the retail location. This also will help some of the retailers less and less want to carry cash. Mm-hmm. So to reduce their risk, a lot of them have gone to only having $50 or $100 or $300 in their cash drawer. This may be able to give them the opportunity to hand someone a debit card rather than cash at 7-Eleven or whatever.
Yeah, I'm confused. What are the thresholds?
The thresholds right now is if a prize is over $600, it can only be cash at a customer service center.
Right.
Cash as in it's their... going to be getting a check, and that's the only method of payment right now, other than if you're a subscriber, in which it can go into your account. Yeah. This takes care of the ability to perhaps pay this person via debit card at retail, so the retailer could actually pay less than $600 still, but do so through a debit card that he would hand the customer. It also allows the lottery from its central points or from the customer service centers to pay them via debit card.
It just allows you to leverage the retail a little more.
Yep.
Got it. I got it.
Okay.
I got it.
Any other questions? Do we have a motion to adopt the proposed lottery prize payment manner? Motion by Commissioner Crotty, second by Commissioner Snyder. All in favor?
Aye. Well, this is to propose it as a proposed rulemaking.
They'll have comment period, right?
Yes,
right.
Begin the comment period.
And if we implement tomorrow. It's clear that there'll be plenty of notice to people who are buying
Absolutely.
The game.
Yep.
Yeah.
All in favor?
Aye.
The proposal is approved. Moving on to new business. There are two items that are listed under new business. The first is the plan of organization. At our meeting on July 26th, we adopted a plan of organization so as to be in compliance with racing parimutuel wagering and breeding law, section 103.1, which requires the commission to establish a plan of organization. The plan of organization requires minor revision to remove duties that are not undertaken by the Office of Internal Audit and address and make a corresponding change to the Bureau of Administration and Finance. An amended plan of organization for the commission has been circulated to the commissioners. Does anyone care to discuss the draft? A resolution adopting the plan of organization has been prepared by council and would accept the motion to adopt the resolution. Motion by Commissioner Crotty, second by Commissioner Sample. All those in favor?
Aye.
The resolution is approved. The second item under new business is the confirmation of DiCarlo's summary suspension. Since our last meeting, the commission ordered the summary suspension of Joseph D. DiCarlo, a standard bred trainer licensee. I think it's prudent that our minutes reflect that each commissioner was presented with written allegations that required immediate and effective action to assure the integrity of racing, its reputation, and the safety of the participants, and that each of us independently approved the summary suspension of DiCarlo's occupational licenses after we each made a finding that the public safety and welfare imperatively required emergency action. Any discussion on that matter?
No.
I just wanted to thank the staff for their communication and the way in which it was explained to us and the information provided in a timely manner. Madam Secretary, please have the minutes so reflected. Moving on to old business, only one item. At the last meeting of the commission, a revised resolution regarding delegation of authority was briefly discussed. As commissioner review has not yet been completed, I propose we defer discussion until our next meeting. Everyone is in agreement with that?
Yep.
Regarding the scheduling of the next meeting, we're still discussing whether or not we're going to have a regular meeting schedule. There are some issues that we have to discuss regarding that, and we will be considering a date for the next meeting and coming out with that as we usually do. Any other questions, any other business that any of the commissioners want to bring up?
There's a couple comments on the actions of the executive director that I thought would be worth discussing, and briefly mentioned it to Rob before we started. There was an extension of a variety of simulcast contracts, and I thought it would be worthwhile to understand those from the commission's point of view, and Rob made some suggestions as to how we should get briefed.
What I would suggest is if we could arrange through NYRA to talk about how commission or simulcast rates are set, perhaps we can have an educational process at one of our future meetings that you can discuss how the different amounts are arrived at in the context of different and varying tracks. At that point, I think the commission would then have an understanding of, at least from the business standpoint, how these things are arrived at when they are submitted to us.
Right. Yeah, I mean, previously...
Can we submit all of our contracts to you for approval?
Mm-hmm. On the simulcast.
We're joined, let the minutes reflect, we're joined by Director Kay from NYRA. Thank you very much for coming.
Yes.
And welcome.
Thank you.
The theory was, and it was under Charlie previously as well, you'd ask the questions about the fundamental pricing of the export of racing.
You're referencing previous meetings with Charlie with
the Franchise Oversight Board, correct.
Which has a different function than what the Gaming Commission has.
Different function, different level of responsibility and oversight as well. And the answers at that point were unsatisfactory. Charlie went the way he did, and then, you know, it's still a fundamental concept that, you know, other elements of economics that play in racing make no sense. It wouldn't have a good analogy to other businesses in terms of rebates, where your own signal can be sort of pirated by other people for a better number than yourself. I know some other states have acted in this regard, Nevada being one of them, where they've regulated certain takeout rates. I think it's something we should understand very, very well as a group. I've not seen those contracts in this capacity. I've heard stories about different parts of them, and then understanding what that means from an ADW point of view as well, from both an export point of view to the other tracks and then from an ADW, because in a racing scenario, you would know the number better than I, but it's certainly during the winter, it's about 90% off track, right? And so those sort of export signals become the bread and butter of what it is you do. I mean, Saratoga is different, but still the numbers are mixed, right? If 50-50, I forget, on track to off track.
Right, but since the contracts, I think, are on an annual basis, the more instructive numbers would be our annual numbers. So you look at your annual revenue from simulcast versus
I mean, you have those break. I just don't remember what they are. At Aqueduct, I remember it was like 88 or 90%, but it's more the contract itself and what gets paid.
If I would suggest, what I'll do is I'll provide President Kay with the materials, a transcript from his predecessor, Charlie Hayward, and his presentations before the Franchise Oversight Board, so you can familiarize yourself with his position. And then I would suggest it would make sense for us to schedule an informational session regarding pricing of simulcasts with your staff. Does that make sense?
Yes. And the strategy behind it and what goes on. Because
that would be very healthy for me, because I'm not less than anybody.
Something else?
We did, but it cleared it. It was on the DIP financing. No, there's nothing else.
And I'd accept the motion to adjourn. Motion by Commissioner Sample, second by Commissioner Crotty. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you all very much for coming.